Accession number 10170, reel number 7.
Mr. Walter Spencer, reel 7. You were telling me about the concert parties that your padre, Beth, organised. I wonder if you could give me a bit more detail about them.
Well, there were about, I should think, about 30 of us who got together, and we used to sing part songs. And that kind of, this was carried on when we were at rest, not in the front line or when you're in active service. But you get together an evening in any hall you could find, and you'd sing little part songs. We sung in, you might call us a male voice choir, a miniature male voice choir. And we gave concert frequently when the troops were out, because there was nowhere to go, you see. We were out in no man's land. There was only perhaps an army hut or something like that that you could assemble in to give concerts. Perhaps a school, a village school or somewhere like that. And it would be for the benefit of the troops, not for ordinary civilians, although civilians did use to steal in some time to listen to us. But it got quite a nice thing, and we learnt quite a good number of songs, and the troops were very glad about it. They used to applaud and shout out. You know, we used to get a lot of people interrupting and shouting out, you know, after we'd finished the thing, but it was laughable in some places. But anyhow, it was a step toward amusement.
What sort of songs did you sing?
Generally, Lyndon Lee, something like that. And some of the music hall pieces which were going at the time. I can't remember many of the titles, but that was that kind of music. Somebody had been on leave, perhaps, and he'd brought a piece back to give to the padre that we could learn from, you see. Some current thing that was running in London at the time. And we used to learn it off and then sing at the concert.
Would you ever put on shows, or would you just do individual songs?
No, only individual songs, and there'd be generally songs which were going about that time when the war was on and come from shows in London, extracts, you might say.
So you wouldn't dress up?
No, we were just in ordinary clothes. And every time, I should say, we had a concert, it was when we had what we called a long rest, perhaps once a month or something like that. And they were all very, very well attended, and troops appreciated them quite a lot. And it was very good, Mr. West, because he used to waste a lot of time in practice, you see, and we were learning the stuff. Although most of us could read music, we hadn't got far enough advanced to pick a piece up right away, you see.
Were most of you, of the troupe, of the singers, ex-choir boys and such like?
Yeah, a good many of them were, yes. I should say the majority of them were ex-choir people who'd learned, who'd got the fundamental knowledge of music, you see, and could sing their part. Unfortunately, we had about enough tenors to balance the basses kind of thing to make a male voice choir up.
Would you be on, when you did a show, was it just you performing, or would there be other acts?
Oh, no, there would be other acts. We'd usually have a comedian or two in the battalion who would come up and say something very comical, you know, and they get quite a number of people who are quite talented, you know. A fellow would come out of the audience and sing a song on his own, a solo, you see. But it was real good. We could put about an hour and a half's entertainment at a concert, and they were always very, very popular.
Right. So that another entertainment that some people would play, perhaps, is cards. Would you involve yourself in cards or gambling?
No, I never did, but I would say perhaps the majority of them did, but I was never a card man. I didn't, I wasn't brought up that way. I didn't use cards, gambling. We perhaps have occasionally a quiet game of whist or something like that. Beyond that, I wouldn't touch cards at all. We would sometimes, by the way, have a little draft. We used to play drafts a lot. If we could carry on a draft tournament, you see, and there was a little prize given up for this. The officers collect among themselves and buy little token prizes, you see, for people.
What about visiting the local village?
Well,
if the or poppering would be mostly, but I mean, we're talking about rest times generally.
Yes, yes. Of course, poppering was a very big centre for us and all troops in the Ypres salient because there was Toc H there, you know. You've heard of Toc H. That was founded by Bishop Talbot, Talbot House, it was.
What was that like? What did it offer you as a soldier?
Well, it was a large building. I don't know what it had previously been used for, but it was a two-storey building and had one, two, three, four rooms to. And there was a full-size billiard table in one room, which all the troops used to go for, of course. And we used to play... some played chess and some played draughts, dominoes and skittle alley and that kind of thing. But it was always well patronised by the troops because there was nothing else to do at that time. Well, if we wanted to go out into the town...
At Talbot House, was there any religious atmosphere there? Did they have...
No, not necessarily religious. It said, by the way, on the porch when you went in, all rank abandon, ye who enter here. That if you're an officer or if you're a private, if you're signing what you forgot all that and you're all a community together, you see. That was the idea of that.
Would you get many officers and NCOs in there?
Not many officers, but plenty of NCOs. You see, the officers, especially in the guards, were a thing apart, as you might say. And they definitely had instructions not to mix with the troops in any shape or form, and they didn't. Although we appreciated it for one thing, because they were the people we looked up to, and they were the people who had whose command had to be obeyed by us.
Did this all abandoning of rank within Toc H... Did it work?
Oh, yes, it worked very well. By the way, you could get drinks there, but no alcoholics. You could get tea, coffee or cocoa, and you could get biscuits, and it was quite a refreshment place, as well as a place where we could amuse ourselves with games.
Did they charge for the refreshments?
Yes, there was only a very small charge, though, because, of course, we hadn't got much money and 7 shillings a week anyhow. But they did, I think... If I remember rightly, I think a cup of tea was about twopence, and then you could get perhaps 2 pounds of the biscuits. Well, that would be sufficient for you for that evening, you see. But it was very, very well attended, and it was very well run.
Did you ever meet Talbot?
No, not personally. I never did meet him. But he was about, and he used to go into there so often, you know. Of course, we should perhaps be up the line when he called and that kind of thing. But he was very well known. There was also a fellow we used to call Woodbine Willie, who used to come with cigarettes and give them away. Oh, hundreds of packets of cigarettes he'd give to the troops.
Who was he? Who was he attached to?
I think he was attached to the YMCA. I'm never certain, but he wore some kind of a uniform, not a khaki one, but it was as far as I remember, a blue serge uniform. And he'd come in periodically and just come in and give his cigarettes out and go away again, you see.
He'd come into the Naffy?
Yes.
Not into Talbot House?
That's right, yes. That's right. And just give these woodbines out and then he'd go away when they'd all gone.
What kind of a man was he? Did you know any more about him?
No, it was a man about 40, and we did think that he was probably connected perhaps with the church army or something like that. It could be that.
Was he regarded as an eccentric, or were people just very grateful? Or
troops were very grateful, of course. If they get English cigarettes, they thought they were on top of the world.
Well, what else did... I was asking just before, who were the people running Toc H? Which organisation did they belong to? The Church of England, or...?
Well, it was mainly run, at the top of it, by a French concern. It was run by them, and I understand finance from them. And We never did get the bottom who really run it, but there were some of our officers who were there in charge of different things, they say, stores, we'll say. But they didn't take part in any of the games or anything like that. They were just gave the services to give different things out.
Well, you mentioned the NAFI. What was the NAFI like in Poperinghe?
Oh, the NAFI was all right. That was that. You know what the NAFI was, of course, don't you? It was a place organised where they'd hutments around nearly all the near where the rest billets were, and you could go and purchase your cup of tea or biscuits or anything like that. And I believe that was run by the Church Army, because there were Church Army officials there. I know that definitely, because they used to wear the uniform, you see.
Was it which did you prefer, the NAFI or the
Tok H? I preferred Tok H, but there was only one Tok H, you see, but there were perhaps hundreds of NAFIs around different places. The only danger, of course, of the NAFIs was troops raiding and breaking in and pinching stuff when others were absent. They got an epidemic of that at one time, but it was soon stopped.
Now, what else would you do? This is, remembering it's 1916, this session. What else would you do in Poperinghe?
Walk round. There was a place, by the way, there were two places that sold English beer. And they were, of course, quite popular on the troops. And they usually used to get sold out very quickly when battalion was in. If you were in the place long, you'd find they'd got no beer out about a week. But still,
what were those places? Where were they, and who organised them?
They were entirely French estaminets, but they used to get this. They used to get Guinness's stout for one thing, and they used to have it on the label outside. You see, Guinness stout sold here, and of course that would attract all the like bees around the honey.
Would you go there for a drink?
I did occasionally, but I wasn't really a drinking man. But occasionally, a pal and myself would go in and have one drink and come out again. And
what was it like in there?
Atmosphere very much like an English public house, as far as I could see. And you could sit down there and talk and drink your ale. And then in different places where we used to go, we'd walk around the town a bit. Of course, they're nearly all the towns, although they were behind the line, they'd receive some shelling or bombing or something like that, but we used to walk around, but we didn't get involved much with civilians because there weren't many civilians up as far as they, you see. We weren't back far enough from the line.
Were there any French, more traditional French estaminets you'd visit, you know, where they serve wine and
yes,
French beer?
Yes, in Pop West, I think there'd be at least half a dozen in a place like Poperinghe, and some of them used to go in there, but they never mingled with the French, because there was all the difficulty of the language, of course, and they were generally French peasants, and you didn't come across many men, Frenchmen, because they were all in the army. It was mostly women and children, you see, who were in these places.
Did they serve food as well as alcohol in the estaminets?
No, I didn't see much food, no. The civilians themselves were fairly short of food, and there couldn't be much food flowing about, you see. And we didn't press for food. We usually go in there for coffee. You could go and have a cup of coffee and sit down, you know, and you'd pay for it, of course, but madam would be pleased to see you. The coffee pot used to be on top of a large tortoiseshell stove, a round stove. It was generally about the centre of the room, and they used to have a pot on there, which would roughly hold about a gallon of water, I think. And first thing in the morning, they'd put the coffee in and put the water in, and then keep ladling it out and selling it during the day till night time. They'd only have one one pan, and it'd be kept on flowing water and coffee into it, see, they didn't rinse it out every time. Anyhow, we appreciated it was a drink, and it was somewhere to go and sit, you see, which would be warm.
Were you used to coffee? Was it a popular drink in England at the time?
Well, I wasn't so used to coffees or with tea, but see, you couldn't get tea in France. That was the funny point. You could either get cocoa or coffee, but not tea. So we had to have what we could get. and you could get very little in the sweet line or anything like that. You wouldn't buy chocolate in France. There was none stocked in the shops. But you could get a little coffee up at the Naffy. A little chocolate, I mean, up at the Naffy.
Now, you were not a teetotaler, but you weren't, as you say, a drinking man. Were some of the battalion drinking men? Were there any cases of drunkenness when you were out at rest, when alcohol was fairly available?
Well, very few, because they hadn't sufficient money, you see, for getting 7 shillings a week, and they'd want a bit of money for smokes and that kind of thing. You could buy French cigarettes, by the way, but they weren't very palatable, and tobacco and that kind of thing. Chiefly, you'd go and get coffee and biscuits, and that would be the extent of your wealth.
Would you go for walks?
Yes, sometimes, but we didn't want to do much walking, because generally in the daytime, even when we were out at rest, we had a route march in the morning. All the battalion come on parade and march around in sections of four, round about the village, you know, perhaps about a 7 or 8 mile walk.
Now, we've dealt really now with the period you were at Ypres in 1916, and around about possibly late July, but definitely August, you moved up to the Somme front.
That's right.
Can you tell me, do you remember the journey up there at all?
Yes, it was a fairly long march, it seemed to us, and the weather conditions were very, very bad. There was plenty of mud about. It was raining most of the time. And actually, we went up to Carnoy Valley, and Carnoy Valley was mostly used by the cavalry for horse lines. They used to have these horses all roped together right away up the valley, you see, like a clothesline might be, and all attached to there, because they weren't using them, and they were never used to any effect, really. But that was one of their main places.
What were you doing in Carnoy Valley? That was behind the lines. What were you just?
Actually, we were in reserve to another division. You see, we were up in the line. We used to often go to places and get posted and never go into the firing line. You see, if we weren't necessary, if there was no attack, we wouldn't be used. And we used to be up at Carnoy in reserve for, perhaps a fortnight or so, and then move on to another place. We were constantly being moved about, because it just depended upon the German attacks, how strong they were in different places, and we were actually doing a lot of what we call reserve work without going to the line. It depended upon if there was anything serious. Of course, we wouldn't man the front line.
Did you see yourself as the elite troops, as guards?
Well, no, we never realised it. I suppose we were, to a certain extent. We were kind of looked up to, I think, by different line regiments, but we didn't think, and it didn't come to us that we were anywhere superior to anybody else. It was all taken with a grain of salt. Of course, they used to try and take it out of us, you know, pull our legs, you might say, in the army, about the guards and all that. But
what about, in particular? Can you remember any of the sort of things that were said to you?
Well, they'd say silly things like last on the field and first off, or something like that. Would be a kind of a soldier's skit, you see, to one another. It didn't get down far. We got on well, very well with all the other. Of course, the mixture of troops everywhere. You went, a few artillery men and perhaps a few cavalry men and a few infantry, and you got a mixture of the different kinds, and they always did a lot of leg pulling.
Now, did you actually do any fighting on the Somme, your battalion?
In the line, Neuchâtel, we were in Neuchâtel only once, and we were in the line for one do. It was for 5 days. And
whereabouts was this, sorry? Whereabouts in the line, sorry?
I've just said it again. Neuchâtel.
That's on the Somme?
Yes. Well, it's almost midway between the Somme and Ypres.
I see. You mean Neuchâtel?
Yes, sorry. Yes, no spell. Yes. We did a spell there, just one, and then usually when you've done, for say, 4 or 5 days in the line, you'd have perhaps a week or a little bit more in reserve and then back, you see. That's how you used to work, 1, 2, 3 all the time.
Were you put into any actual assaults during this time, in late 1916?
Well,
did you have to actually go into any assaults, attacks? Did you make the battalion?
No, it was mainly when Jerry was attacking. We didn't make any attacks. The only attacks made up that way were the three big attacks, of course, were EEP, and there was a big attack after we left New Chapelle, but we'd gone away from there then.
So your period in the Somme was largely one of defensive work and of reserve work.
That's right,
you
yes.
weren't used as attack troops
no,
in 1916.
No, not the commencement. We went into the Somme later, but it was getting on then toward, I think, 1917 time, when Ginchy and Flores and Goudicourt, three villages there, we actually took them in one assault later on in the war. That was, of course, sometime after the big attack on July the 1st, 1916.
What do you remember about those attacks? The attacks on Goudicourt?
Well, they were fairly easy because at that time they'd got some tanks. We didn't often see tanks and we hadn't got much faith in them, but the tanks had been into Flores and Ginchy, and we did see that. I think that was the first time we did see tanks, and they saw them going down the main street, and of course Jerry was running like hell, running away, but that soon got altered and they had some tanks to counteract ours and tank traps and all that kind of thing, and they weren't very vulnerable.
Did
really.
You have to actually attack with tanks? Do you remember how? Did you actually attack with tanks, or did you just see them?
We attacked once with tanks, and there are only 3 or 4 tanks, as far as I remember, and 2 of those got knocked out in the attack.
What do you remember about that attack? How did you work with them, or did it break down?
Well, the main objection to the tank was that it didn't move fast enough, for one thing. It only go at a speed of 4 miles an hour, I think, almost walking pace. And, of course, although Jerry, the frightening appearance of these things would frighten him a bit, they wouldn't know its capabilities and that, all that kind of thing. But soon after, they got rid of that kind. And they had special shells, you know, armour-piercing shells which knocked them straight out.
What did you do in that attack? Can you remember what your part was in it?
Yes, we just simply went up through the main street, and the most of it was cleared because the tanks had kind of frightened Jerry out.
This is at Fleurs?
We took Fleurs and Ginchy in one sweep, one day, and occupied them. And all we did then would be establish a line of trenches or something like that, and then we would be relieved by another lot, you see.
That would be in September 1916.
That's right, yes.
And you don't remember much about the nature of the actual fighting?
No. Well, you see, so much of the actual fighting was so similar in all engagements, and you couldn't kind of distinguish one from the other for that reason, you see. There'd usually be a main street through a village, and that's where most of the attacks would go, and their method, of course, would be to one lock one side and the other, searching all the cellars and all the houses, you see, and taking prisoners if there were any there, or dealing with them some other way, if they'd left any.
How did you feel under fire in these circumstances?
Oh, you got used to it. The beginning, you see, the initial fighting in 1915, you got used to it, and as the years went on, you got more used to it, and you used to think to yourself, well, if it's my turn, I should go. There was that feeling among the majority of us. We didn't say, look out or anything like that. You just took everything as it came.
Now, you mentioned the attack on Goudicourt as well.
Goudicourt, yes. Yeah. Goudicourt was another village on the left of Flores as he went in. And although our battalion didn't actually go in, the Welsh Guards went in. They were in our brigade. They went into Goudicourt, and we went straight on to Flores and Ginchy.
Oh, that was the same time, the same day.
That was the same day, yes. Yes. Of course, that Jerry was getting a bit weak at that time there, or that particular the line was weak. You can't say it might be the quality of the troops, or it maybe they hadn't got enough reserves up there, you see, to be strong.
So that, and that, as far as you know, was the only main attack you were involved in?
Oh, no, we had...
On the Somme?
On the Somme, yes. That was all that took us on the Somme. We were at Thiepval for quite a time, but we were only holding the line, all in the front line. There was no attack made.
What were conditions like holding the line on the Somme? Were they much worse than they'd been earlier in 1916 on the Ypres sector?
Well, there was plenty of... what we call trench clearing to do. That's making up where the old trenches have been bombarded or anything like that, and making things more secure for somebody else coming in, you see. But generally there wasn't much fighting, but the conditions were bad because there was so much clay on the Somme, and when it rained there was all mud. That's what you had to contend with mostly there.
When you left, where did you go from the Somme, when you left the Somme area?
We went to Levante, L-A-V-A-N-T-I-E. Have you got your Levante down on there? Yeah. But it was only for rest billets, you see. We'd only be there perhaps about another week or 10 days, and then be away again. I can remember Levante because I had my 21st birthday there. But it was behind the line. It wasn't badly bombed. It had been shelled a bit.
Right, from there, where did you go then in 1916? Getting right towards the end of 1916 now.
What have we got down after the one here?
You seem on your notes that you gave me to suggest you went back to Ypres in very late 1916.
Yes, we did. That's right, we went back to Ypres. We'd be round about one of the camps at Alverdinge and... go into the line from there.
So, I know it's very difficult to sort out. What can you remember the course of where your postings were, as far as you can remember, through 1916 into 1917? Because it's not very clear.
I can't remember them in sequence. You know, as I said before, one place was so much like another. For us, when we got in the trenches, we didn't know much that we would be away from towns, you see. We didn't know much about the situation, except how far it was from Ypres to, we'll say, the Somme or Luz or anything like that.
What are the main incidents you remember then from the rest of the fighting? We'll try and put them into order later, so to speak.
Yes.
What else do you remember about your service on the Western Front?
Yes, I've told the episode where I laid out on the front and a very light landed on my back and
that
burnt
was
through
Luz.
My haversack.
Yes,
I've told her that. Yes, that was at Luz.
The next certain thing you remember is that you were in Passchendaele in the Third Battle of Ypres.
That's right.
What can you remember about the fighting at Third Ypres?
Well, it was very, very... what do you call heavy? There were a lot of machine gun fire there, for one thing. And again, Jerry held the high ground round about Passchendaele Ridge, you see. That's what we were after assaulting. And with him having that advantage of the high ground, what our casualties were always very, very heavy there. And the trenches were not very good.
What were the ground conditions like?
The ground conditions, again, were muddy. And I had seen up there, we'd seen mules which used to carry the ammunition up where the track couldn't take anything else. You see, the mules used to carry with the ammunition on each side of their saddlebag up to the guns. And I've seen mules go into shell holes and be absolutely drowned. You couldn't get them out. There was no method of pulling them out, you see, poor devils. You just see them go in and going further down, and of course the weight of the shells on each side of them was accelerating their movement into the mud, and they had to be shot.